I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'm partnered with Fitbit again this season. And with the evenings getting brighter, I'm planning to get out, exercise more, even if it's only in my own garden, breathe in the fresh air, and set myself even more challenges. Whether it's a run, a swim, or a weight session, my Fitbit is always on my wrist, providing me with key stats about my health and well-being to help empower and support me in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. My fitness journey has been slow yet consistent. I started with a 1 kilometre jog on the treadmill and worked my way up to a 12-kilometre run in the Swiss Alps 1 year later. One step at a time, one foot in front of the other. Starting my fitness journey has been one of the best things I've ever done for myself, and I'm proud to be partnered with Fitbit. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I'm releasing the audio from my very first live show in January. I thought long and hard about who my guest should be, and I felt there was no way I could do my first show without my friend Claire Solon. To this day, I still get messages about our podcast together all the way back in season one. In many ways, I feel like this was the episode that set the tone for my podcast going forward. And I listened to it at least 5 times before I published it, because deep down, I knew it was really, really special. And I'm so glad so many of my listeners thought so too. But I always felt there was more to Claire's story, so that's why I asked her back to continue our conversation. The same can be said for my podcast with Miriam Hussey, with people telling me that they listened to it over and over again, because Miriam's advice and knowledge was so helpful in learning how to love yourself, deal with stress, and practice self-care. That night in the Stella Theatre in Rathmines is a night that I will never, ever forget. Thank you to everyone who came and got involved, for all the questions from the audience, and how could we forget the sing-song at the end. I really hope everyone is well this week, and I hope you enjoy this episode. My first guest is Claire Solon. I hope you've listened to my podcast with her. She's a very, very special friend to me. Many of you might know that when you're sick, often people avoid you because they want to just leave you in peace. But Claire knocked on my door, and she brought 2 books with her that day. The first book was Oprah, What I Know For Sure, and that changed my relationship with cancer. And she brought me Gabby Bernstein, The Universe Has Your Back, and that made me quit my job. So 2 books that have had such an amazing impact on my life. So I could not do this show without her. I hope you enjoyed our podcast together. I want to continue our conversation tonight, so please welcome Claire Solon. Claire, thank you so much for being here today. I want to start with, I suppose, for people who may not be familiar with your story, what was the moment that put you on your wellness journey?
2012. My life as I knew it completely fell apart. I was flying high with a relationship that I thought would go the distance and a job I'd always wanted. And within 2 months of each other, both of those things were gone. I had always been Little Miss Sunshine, and I had worn a mask for most of my life. And so when the depression came and the darkness came, I just pulled on the mask and kept up the facade, which I realize now was the most damaging thing I could have done. I was a secret self-loather, but I was Little Miss Sunshine on the outside, so I didn't want to leave my flat. I didn't want to get on public transport. I didn't want to walk down the street. And I didn't want to tell anybody either. I spoke to a friend of mine who was struggling with challenges of her own, and we shared feelings of apathy for life, hopelessness, and we both experienced intrusive thoughts. I was in trouble, and I knew I needed help.
So where did you turn to?
That same friend advised me to look into therapy. I would never have been against therapy, but I'd never had to seek it out before. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it again tonight was because it changed my life. And when I first thought about going to get therapy, I thought, well, I can't afford it. I've just lost my job. I can't afford to see what would be a GP fee every single week to get myself back on track. But then I discovered that actually there's affordable therapy available for all of us if you look in the right places.
And this is interesting because I'd never heard of affordable therapy until we met last year and recorded that podcast together. So you go to a therapist and you pay what you can afford.
So basically, you've got to find those therapists who are in training. Like pilots, they have to work up their hours in order to qualify. So it's a mutually beneficial scenario. You could go and help them train and they can qualify. And so I met Anne-Marie, and before I met Anne-Marie, I was told by the coordinator that I could pay exactly what I could afford for my sessions.
And after that first session that you went to, did you know that things were going to get better, or were you still, you know, a bit iffy about therapy at this point?
It was terrible.
Terrible?
Yeah. It was awkward. I tried to make small talk with a therapist, and anybody who's been at therapy, this is what I got.
Were you trying to see if she, did you want your therapist to like you?
Yeah. I was a radio presenter on a breakfast show. I was like, hi, how are you going? What a day, eh? First session. And she just went. And she continued to do that for the first three months. And any day that I was really wound up and came in and didn't want to open up to her, she'd just sit and wait with her head to one side until I stopped talking. And then I'd start to cry. But what I wanted to say was, I chose the therapy route, but what I think is really important in life, if you experience challenges or if your emotions are out of control, if you find yourself reacting in life and not acting, all you need to do is find an independent ear. Your friends and family want to help, but unfortunately they're biased. They're biased towards you. They want you to be better. They also want you to be better for them. So they'll smooth over the cracks. Mm. So you probably need to have a word with somebody who has nothing to do with you. So a mentor maybe in work, a life coach, perhaps some CBT, which is short-term behavioral therapy, or therapy. But it is my proudest achievement.
That's amazing. Well done. You went then and you started meditating and exercising more. You gave up alcohol for a year. Tell us a little bit about meditation in India, and you found your tribe. I want to hear about that.
So I did 3 years of therapy. I didn't need 3 years of therapy, which Anne-Marie told me at the very last session, but I liked it. I love talking about myself. So I did 3 years, and after that, my mental health was in a really good state, and I decided to move to London. And I knew I needed something to maintain this peace of mind that I'd found, and meditation was that. And everybody at the time, around 2015, was talking about headspace. Andy Puddicombe, who's done an incredible TED Talk on meditation, created this app. Now, Andy went through mental health issues in his 20s and moved to the Himalayas to become a monk. Some of us turned to therapy, some of us moved to the Himalayas. So I did a little bit of research on this app and decided that this was good for me because London was such a culture shock. It was, you know, a really busy and anonymous city, and I just needed something that would level me out. So he does guided meditations. He's got a lovely voice that doesn't offend you. And so I was listening to Headspace for months. And then I met a girl, an Irish girl, who was in the first job I got in London. And she told me she'd just been on a Buddhist retreat in Devon.
Oh, in Devon?
Devon, of all places. So I thought, well, this is perfect for me. This is the next step on my meditation journey. And I went to Devon and I stayed on a farm with 9 other people, and I learned to meditate in silence. Now it's challenging, because your thoughts are coming in constantly, and you're thinking, are my thoughts me? No, my thoughts aren't me. I'm judging, I'm being judged, I'm not concentrating. So it was difficult, but I would recommend, if anybody is interested in doing meditation, it's a very good way to start, because sitting down on a cushion and trying to concentrate on meditation is difficult if you are in a stressful job or your kids are outside the room or you've things going on. Whereas if you remove yourself and send yourself on a retreat, then you escape normal life and you can lose yourself in it.
So that really then was kind of like exercise for your mind.
Exactly, exactly. If you exercise your body, why wouldn't you want to find peace of mind?
And then you started chanting.
Yeah.
Tell us about the chanting.
So when I got into meditation, I realized that there was a whole world and a whole community that I never knew existed. And they are some of the most special people I've met, actually, in life. Because there's nothing quite like sitting in a group, in a room, chanting mantras and listening to the vibrations and feeling the energy. Mm. Everybody's chanting the same mantra over and over and over. And the great thing about chanting is it doesn't give your thoughts an opportunity to interrupt your meditation. So I would definitely recommend anybody Googling mantra meditation or chanting meditation. There are classes all over Ireland, all over the world.
And
it's worth going.
And how do you feel after chanting?
Alive. Alive.
Well, you weren't chanting in the bathroom there when you were trying to...
I should have.
...zip up my jumpsuit, Claire. Everyone in the bathroom was like this, no, that's fine.
It's fine.
I was like, why is everyone speaking like this? It's not fine. tell us about sea swimming. You did dip in the nip. Has anyone here done dip in the nip?
Strip and dip. Who's done it?
Nobody.
My friend Laura, who was here, did it with me. Laura was great, actually. Laura just stripped off straight away, and we sat on a beach with, I want to say between 3,500 and 4,000 women, wearing nothing. Nothing at all.
And are you just whipping it off, or does it come off? Like?
Well, I was quite gingerly taking my... But there were women, and I actually was in the middle of doing my year off alcohol. So unfortunately, I wasn't partaking in the Prosecco picnics that were all over the beach. So unfortunately, I had no Dutch courage. I just had to remove my bits. But it was wonderful. It was a fantastic day.
I'm trying to, I suppose, set my intention to start sea swimming in 2020. I went for a dip just after chemo into the sea in Portugal, and I literally felt the benefits of it for months afterwards. And myself and Jamie are quite into Wim Hof at the moment. Did you see any of his stuff on YouTube? Or he has an episode with Gwyneth Paltrow now on her Goop show. And it's very transformative, isn't it? Yeah. What effect it can have on you. So how do you feel after you do a sea swim?
So a swim is, I don't know if you could say swim. You jump in, you bend down, and you jump out screaming.
Okay.
So it's probably a dip in the sea is really all, not a swim. But what cold water swimming does for me, dipping, does for me is... When you get in, and the cold takes over and creeps up your body. It suspends your thoughts. So whatever's been going on, whatever you've been worried about, you stop thinking about it. And all you think about is how cold you are and how you want to stay in longer than everybody else on the beach. So you're like, yeah, it's fine. I love this. Yeah, it's great. But every time you go, your body gets more and more used to it. So I would recommend, if you want to give it a go, start in the shower.
Okay.
So do a nice hot shower as you would as normal. And the last 30 seconds, turn it right down. Mm. And try, and they Wim Hof and anybody who does it regularly says you need to control your breathing. So your instinct is to go... But actually, you need to be like... So try that in the shower tomorrow morning.
Okay, I definitely will. Tell us about alcohol-free. Why did you decide that you were going to not drink for a full year?
I have a wonderful mentor who tells it like it is. And he asked me a few... interesting questions a few years ago, like, what are you doing with your life? Was the first one. And I said, oh, I'm just, you know, tripping along. I moved to London, didn't I? I took the plunge. Life is fine. And he said, but you're getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to produce a radio breakfast show. So Monday to Friday, you're in a fog. And then at the weekends, you're binge drinking. So you're in a fog. So that's 7 days of the week where you're not very compass mentis. When do you plan? Like, when do you, you know, make decisions? And I thought, well, I don't. Life just happens and it's fine. He said to me, the best thing you could do is try and take some time off alcohol. Now, he did say a year, which for somebody like me who is or was a super socializer, I was rent a friend every event. I was there with a glass of wine or fizz. It was a big challenge, but I decided that I needed to do something different because I was bored and I was lonely. And he said, I promise you, if you do this, you will change your life. And so I did. I stopped drinking, and very quickly the phone stopped ringing and many friends disappeared. There was no invites to boozy brunch because nobody wants you sitting there judging them. And so finally I was left alone. And I think that was the point. It was just me getting to know me without the masks and the distraction of drink.
So without the hangover on a Saturday morning, you were able to get out and say, do the park run or something like that.
Girl, I was leading the tribe. Park run tooting Beck. I was like, hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome. I'm like, who's this Irish girl? I'm like, hey, hello. I was doing park run on a Saturday morning. I was singing. I joined an acting class. I was cooking. Smoked cod curry was my dish du jour. I found hobbies I never had a headspace for when I was drinking.
Wow.
So that was 2018 to 2019. Mm-hmm. Really successful, delighted with myself, went back on drink last year with a different attitude and a different relationship to alcohol. And I just felt fine, but not great. The consistent moods I had when I was off alcohol, the brilliant sleeps, the creativity, my imagination, everything was firing. My focus was wonderful, and I missed that. So now I am nearly a month into some more alcohol-free times.
Well done.
I'd just like to say also, if alcohol-free does interest you, if you've done Dry January, great. But if you would like to know more about it, there's a challenge called 1 Year No Beer. And it is a website and also a Facebook group. So if you fancy it, you can do 28 days, 90 days, or 365 days. And there's a community waiting on Facebook to help you, support you, and encourage you.
Tell me about the power of human connection in your life, because I would imagine living in London, it can be quite isolating. How do you get on there with that?
So I ran over there in 2015 looking for that, looking for all the things that people leave London for. It's so big, it's so bustling, it's so busy, nobody cares about you, nobody looks at you, it's so anonymous. I was like, brilliant, this is exactly what I need. And then as time goes by, you're like, any chances of eye contact? No. Go into Boots or the supermarket. Hello. And they're just...
There's a crazy Irish...
Exactly. Again. There's that girl again looking for some small talk. They just don't do it like we do. They really haven't got time for polite conversation. And I remember actually on a couple of occasions walking into my local Sainsbury's because it's so friendly in there. And the staff are so well trained that I would just walk along and I'd say, I'm looking for some oat milk. And they're like, yes, just this way. And they bring me to the oat milk and they'd say, anything else I can help you with? And it would take all of my strength not to say, I'm just having a really bad day. It's not feeling great. But I really make an effort to smile because there's nothing like getting a smile from a stranger. Mm. You know, if you can make eye contact with somebody and just have a little smile, it really goes a long way.
It is so nice to just get that. Good morning, how are you?
It's lovely. And if you can make an effort to do it, it's difficult sometimes because people do look at you funny, but it's a really healthy habit to adopt. Mm. And there's so much of this. You know, the barrier between us and each other is our phones these days.
So talk to me about the lessons that it took you the longest to learn. There's three O's here.
Yeah. First up is rumination. I have been doing this for most of my life with no idea how badly it was affecting my mental health.
Tell us what rumination is.
Rumination is chewing over or replaying sad, distressing, hurtful experiences or events or thoughts over and over, tormenting yourself, actually. I have done this since I was 10 or 11. And I just thought it was normal until I watched a TED Talk by a guy called Guy Winch, who's an author and a psychologist. And he talked about the detrimental effects of thinking about those embarrassing heartbreak moments in your life over and over again. I've got a couple of examples which will make you laugh. Age 10, I joined a new school in primary school, and this was one of the thoughts that I was bringing into my 30s. I was age 10, and all of the girls in my class were friends, and at lunchtime they used to talk about Home and Away. And I was thinking to myself, damn, I'm not allowed to watch Home and Away. What am I going to do to get into this group? So one day I decided I'm going to walk into that schoolyard and I'm just going to pretend I saw last night's episode and see what they said. Problem was, they weren't talking about last night's episode. They'd gotten some intel from Australia about what was going to happen in 2 months' time. And they were talking about this. And not last night's episode. So I walk up and I'm like, hey girls, oh my God, last night's episode was amazing. And they were like, well, you couldn't have seen it because we're not talking about last night's episode. We're talking about what's going to happen in 2 months' time. And I thought, oh my God, that's it. They're never going to be friends with me. This story stayed with me.
No.
I was thinking about I would replay this story over in my mind up until my 30s. I tried to play Nintendo Wii with a guy who I wasn't seeing for very long. We were in his sitting room and all of his friends used to gather all the time and play Nintendo Wii. So they handed me the remote control to play tennis. And it was terrible. It went really badly. I was swiping at it and I couldn't see it. I was blind. Like, you know, if you're trying to parallel park in front of a load of people, you just forget yeah. how to do it. You're like, I couldn't play. I've played tennis in the real life, but I was like swiping and swinging. I was nearly hitting people in the room as opposed to the balls on the screen. He was so embarrassed he left the room.
Oh no.
His friends all sat there and they're like, have another go. Try again. That stayed with me. I presented California the After Party, one of my favorite jobs I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic, and everybody complimented me and said it was brilliant. But there was a couple of Twitter trolls who thought that I was terrible and the ugliest person they'd ever seen on television. And I kept their horrible tweets so close to me and replayed how that felt to read them over and over. So as soon as I saw this TED Talk, I identified what I was doing. And if you do the same thing, you need to know that rumination can cause clinical depression, alcoholism, eating disorders, and even cardiac disease. Don't beat yourself up. The past is in the past. Live in the present.
That deserves a big clap. Thank you for sharing those stories with us, because I know they're very personal to you and it mustn't be easy to open up like that, so thank you so much. Let's go on to the next word. Do you want to talk about rejection or resistance next?
Resistance, please. So what's resistance? Resistance is discomfort or dissatisfaction with where you're at right now. So if you think about all of the things that you say to yourself every day, oh, there I go again, I didn't go on a run, I am not exercising, and it happens all the time, I'm late for work, I'm always late, oh, I forgot my card to let myself into the building, oh, I've got a head like a sieve. All of these limiting beliefs, all of these negative thoughts that we fill our day with create resistance.
Okay.
So instead of getting into flow, we're actually just constantly at ourselves. My biggest resistance, my single life. Why am I single? I'm in my late 30s. Everybody else I know is in a relationship. Everybody else I know is having kids or getting married. What's wrong with me? Oh, she's just turned 39. She'd want to be getting on with it, wouldn't she? Who's that? Who is that? It's not me. They're not my thoughts. Is it my mum? It's not even my mum. It's just a faceless, nameless person that I've created to add more judgment on this single life of mine. The thing about it is, I don't dislike singledom. I'm independent. I love my life. I like spending time alone. If I'm lonely, which often I am, I'll call a friend or listen to a podcast. My husband is out there in the long grass of life. He's evaded capture up until now, but I'll find him. And when I do, I will get into flow and accept exactly where I am right now, because this is where I'm meant to be. In this job, in this house share of mine, in this single life. I'm going to make peace with uncertainty. I don't know what's ahead, but I'm happy with who I am.
And rejection.
My fear of rejection started when I was very young, and I allowed it to isolate me from taking opportunities, particularly in my personal life. So I feared rejection from friends. I never really expressed opinions too much, or never made decisions about what we were going to do, or never put my head above, you know, the gang, because I just wanted to make sure that everybody around me was happy. I feared rejection from boyfriends. I feared rejection from bosses. I feared rejection from strangers, which played havoc with my online dating life, I can tell you. But I realized, actually, after digging deep with my mentor into what rejection is, it's not the sting of hearing you didn't get the job or hearing that a relationship is over. It's the aftermath. So I was rejected by people, by companies. But the most painful rejection came from myself. Because after I was rejected, instead of putting my arm around me and being a compassionate friend to myself, I just told myself, well, of course, come on. You weren't good enough for that job. You're not even good enough for the job you're in. You weren't going to keep that relationship going. You've got a terrible track record in love. And that's how rejection grew so big in my life. But if I look back to 2012 and say, if that relationship of mine had worked out, would I now have the opportunity to fall in love the right way as the best version of myself? No. And if my job on the breakfast show on 98 FM hadn't disappeared, would I now be in the position I'm in London, having just got promoted? No. Rejection is protection. Obstacles are detours in the right direction. Remember, if there's challenging times in your life, like you've had, they serve a purpose, and there's a brighter day ahead.
Thank you so much. I feel like our podcast together in the first season, when we recorded it, I knew it was something very special. And it's almost like the Good Glow evolved into what it is that day. It was very special to me, and you're such a great friend. I'm so proud of everything you have learned, and you've grown into such a beautiful person. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Guys, I forgot to mention at the start that we have a Fitbit to give away tonight. So if you want to be in with a chance to win a Fitbit, if you want to post a photo of yourselves from tonight and use the hashtag TheGoodGlowLive, Jamie's going to be going through them and picking a winner for the Fitbit in just about a half an hour's time. I also wanted to mention, I don't know if you guys heard my podcast with Sinead Hingston. Sinead is here tonight. She's taking the photos. She's over there. I know Sinead's podcast has had a huge effect on so many people, and I just wanted to say thank you to Sinead again tonight for coming on my podcast and just being like an absolute inspiration to us all.
Just wanted to take a break to give you an update on the benefits I'm seeing from using my Fitbit Versa 2. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better, to understand your health with data and insights that are unique to you. I love being able to track my workouts, keep an eye on my sleep score, as well as take a mindful moment by using the relax feature. My Fitbit even helps me when I'm not exercising. I use the Alexa feature to check the weather, set timers, and I even use my Fitbit bit to wake me up in the mornings, which means I don't have to sleep beside my phone, so no more late night scrolling.
So next up we have Miriam Hussey. She's a pharmacist and co-founder of The Awakening and Soul Space. I'm sure you all know her. She's a thought leader in human health and performance, and she's going to join us on stage now. Woo! I've had so many messages from people saying they listened to my podcast with Miriam more than once. I know Jamie has. She has a lot of really important messages for us all. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Hi.
Thank you.
I have so much I want to talk to you about, because I think when we recorded our original podcast together, we kind of ran out of time a little bit. As you guys probably know, nature has had this amazing effect on me since I got sick. Before I got sick, Jamie would find it hard to get me out of the apartment to walk to the shop because I hated being cold. And when I got sick and I went for a walk with my mum every day, I felt different when I came home from the park. And it was only after a couple of months that I realized that the outdoors was having such an amazing effect on me. So Miriam, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that and grounding and forest bathing and any insights you might have for us on it.
Yeah, so, well, firstly, thank you for having me here tonight. And when you talk about nature, I think it's so important to remember or realize that we, as human beings, we are nature. We are living, we think we're living in nature, but we as human beings, we are nature. We are natural beings. And the more that we start to connect back to nature is the more, as you mentioned so beautifully there earlier, you get back into that flow state. Because I think in today's world of, you know, this modern, busy, go, go, go world, the more we take ourselves away from nature, so the more we eat unnatural foods, the more we, you know, live in concrete buildings with artificial light, is the more we're pulling ourselves out of our natural rhythms and out of our natural state of being. So that's why when you get out in nature, and everybody's different. So the concept of bio-individuality, there's no two people here in this room the exact same. We have the same software that works in the same way, but we're all different. And I think when you find something, so it may be sea swimming, it may be the mountains, it might be trees, forests, whatever it is for you, when you get back into nature, it activates something within ourselves that enables us to connect to something bigger and more universal than ourselves. And it clears the mind, it gets our endorphins moving, it moves emotion out of the body. Emotion is energy in motion, it needs to be moved out. So there's so much going on for mind, body, as well as soul. When you get immersed back into the natural being, it just allows you to get more into your natural state.
When I went on parental leave last summer, I was trying to decide whether I wanted to walk away from my radio job, and I had 7 weeks to really think about it. So Pia was still napping at the time, so I used to go and lie down in my back garden. I'd say my neighbors were like, what is she doing? But I used to lie there like that and just try to, I suppose I was meditating, and try to just find the answer. Yeah. But there was just something so nice about just lying on the grass. Something, I suppose, when you've got a busy job and you're running around, that you just don't do anymore. And we used to do it as kids all the time.
Absolutely. And I think what it does is it allows us time and space to unplug from the busyness and the go, go, go and the chaos that sometimes we find ourselves in this kind of modern world. And I think one of the biggest pillars that's often missing in today's concept or model of health and wellness is that sense of spirituality or that sense of the soul. And when I say that, people can kind of go, oh, I don't like that word. It's a bit fluffy. I'm not into religion. And I'm not talking about religion, God. Now, it can be. But what nature does is it allows you time and space to disconnect from all of the external noises, all of those other voices that sometimes, you know, we're scrolling on Instagram, we're scrolling on, you know, newspapers and things like that, and we're constantly being pulled into other people's opinions, judgments, comparisons, and we end up shaming and blaming and being very, very judgmental and hard on ourselves. So when you allow yourself time and space, which is what nature does, it allows you sometimes just to, well, I feel personally, for me, it's therapy for the soul. And it allows you time and space just to dial down the external noise and allows you to connect to that part of yourself that is your soul, which is who you are. It's your essence. It's what makes you come alive. It's your dreams. It's your passions. It's your desires. And I think what's happening often in today's world is we're pulled into everybody else's world and out of our own. And it's only when you allow some silence, some time, some stillness, some solitude, that you can actually hear your own gut intuitive messages. You can hear those whispers of the soul. You can hear those instinctive messages. And those that soul purpose or passion. And when you have that in your life, or you're doing something in your life that's meaningful for you, and for you, not for what you think you should be doing, or what your parents think you should be doing, or the job you think you should be in. Back to what you said, when you strip back the mask and you allow time and space just to be still and hear. And that's what nature does so beautifully. It almost draws out the soul within you. It draws out that inner voice that enables you to connect to it. And you get those insightful moments. You get moments of clarity. And you get almost like it's a freedom. It's a sense of liberation. It's a sense of peace. It's a sense of inner calm. And I think, the biggest thing that everybody in today's world, whether we believe it or not, is we're looking for more peace in our mind, more joy in our heart, and more ease in the body, which is less disease, more ease.
I want to talk to you about daily rituals that bring you joy and how often they're the first things to go when we have a busy job, we're busy moms, we're busy wives, we're busy everything, best friends. So my daily ritual that brings me joy, I feel probably a bit stupid saying this, but it's porridge.
I love it.
Right? So I can't start my day without having porridge because, number one, it makes me feel like I'm giving myself the best start, you know, giving myself a chance. It means I'm not running out the door without looking after myself first. Mm-hmm. Often I used to just run out the door without having breakfast. So now my daily ritual is make time for porridge and then I'll be fine. But how do we, I suppose, prioritize these little things that bring us joy?
Yeah, I love that. I'm like you as well. I love porridge in the morning. But I think definitely if we can start our day off the right way, it's almost like, you know, if you have a wild horse and you let it go out of the stables, it's gone for the day. And you'll be all day trying to chase it and bring it back. But if you can tame the horse before you let it out of the stables, well, then you can ride around and it'll be a nice ride. And it's kind of the same in our lives. The minute we get up and start our day, what do we do? So many of us, we have the phone beside us, we'll turn off the alarm, next thing we're in our emails, next thing we're on social media, and we're pulled into already that fight or flight. So if we can start our day with routines, rituals, mantras, it's just a way, porridge, it's a way that almost just sets you up, changes your mindset, and gets you in a frame of mind whereby you start to prioritize what's important. So, for example, you know, if you can even just take 5 minutes in the morning before you get out of bed and just place your hands on your heart, because that will release oxytocin into the system. Oxytocin is our feel-good, snuggle hormone that makes us feel safe. It will actually, and put your hands on your heart and maybe just, you know, practice some gratitude. Practice some deep breathing. Say a prayer if you're religious. You know, close your eyes, visualize the person you'd like to see yourself being that day. What would you like to eat? What would you like to wear? What are the conversations you'd like to hold? What's the energy you want to radiate when you walk into your office? What's the energy you want to give off when you meet your kids? Because whether we know it or not, we're all radiating energy. So you walk into a room, you know someone's stressed and they're high on coffee and sugar, you're almost like, oh my God, you can feel that energy. Mm-hmm. So how do you want your energy to be that day? So by starting your day in the morning, taking 5 deep breaths, saying your little visualizing, getting out of bed, having your porridge, having your hot water and lemon. And I think the most important thing, and that you said it beautifully there, how do we motivate ourselves or to get into that, is to really, I suppose, get to the deeper why. Why would I do this in the first place? Because many of us will change the external, we might change the symptom. And it's similar to, you know, in our conversation I mentioned about working as a pharmacist, what we often do is we'll treat the symptom as opposed to asking, well, what's the root cause? Why have I this sickness in the first place? And it's the same in our lives. We can kind of go, I'll go to the gym and I'll do this and I'll do that because I want to lose weight or I want to X, Y, and Z, which is surface treating the symptom. But I think if you want it to be long-lasting and sustainable in your life, you have to go deeper to the belief system and deeper to the why. Why would I do this in the first place? And that comes from a place of love and not fear. If we want to do something, or like new year, new me, right? I'm going to take on all this stuff. I would often say, you know, what if this year, 2020, was a year where you actually let go of stuff and you learn to strip back the mask and you learn to actually become more of yourself, your authentic self, and less of trying to become someone, somebody else or somebody new. And why would I even do that? Because that comes back to treating the root cause, because you matter. And if you come from a place of love, that means I genuinely want to get up and have my porridge because I know that my health matters. And this comes from a place of love and respect. And I love and truly respect myself, my body enough to look after it, as opposed to, I need to do this now because I need to lose weight and I need to do this, which is ego and fear. Mm-hmm. And ego and fear will never, it's never long lasting. So it's knowing, why would I do it? Because I want to be at my child's wedding. Because I want to be a better parent. Because I want to be better in my job. Because, more importantly, I deserve it. And I think if we can go back to the belief system, like what you said, those inner voices, those beliefs, those limiting beliefs often. And I know myself, I've been on that journey my whole life where I was like, I'm not good enough. I'm not this enough. I'm not that enough. And we end up getting almost like a void or a hole within ourselves. And I shared it the other day on my Instagram. I said that often we're trying to meet an internal need with external feed. And that's, you know, I'll be happy when, or if mm-hmm. I get all the Instagram followers, or if I get the job, or if I lose the weight, or, and we try to suppress and meet this void by, you know, turning to food, turning to alcohol, turning to more work, turning to more, to try and meet this need. And I think if we can strip it back, unravel the layers like you did, get more science, get back to nature, get back to basics, have your little practical morning routines that are simple, not like I need to go for a big, long, massive run every day, because we know we won't do that, especially if you have kids or you're busy or you have to be at the office. What can I do? I deserve, or I'm loving enough to myself to give myself 5 minutes in the morning to make my porridge or to make my hot water and lemon, to do my stretches, to do my deep breathing, simple things. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what cancer did for me. Like, I didn't have to just cancel my plans for a week. I had to cancel my plans for a year. And we were going to see my oncologist for the first time, and it was October, I think, and I rang my friend Hannah from work, and I said, no, don't worry, they'll just blast me with chemo once and I'll be back to work in the new year. I was like, my cancer hasn't spread. And I went into that meeting, and the doctor said, this is a year out of your life. You are going to lose your hair. You are going to lose your eyebrows. You are going to lose your eyelashes. We are putting you into menopause. Cancel your plans for a year. And that was a moment of, whoa, I always hid behind my hair my whole life. I was the entertainment reporter for Spin, so I was out meeting all the celebs. But it's like what you say, you sometimes have to just step back and strip it all away. And yes, I did have to learn the hard way, but it's great that people can know that you can wake up in the morning and just take 5 minutes for yourself.
Yeah.
And that can change your life.
It really can. And I'm big into simplicity. And I think the more we strip things back, go back to basics, go back to eating real food as much as possible, go back to more connection, go back to nature, go back to just deep breathing. Like, it's simple stuff. It's not rocket science. And I think the most important thing, you know, every person here in this room tonight, you know, you'll hear beautiful things from Claire, from Georgie. I think the most important voice as well that you will ever hear is your own voice. Mm. Because nobody is an expert on you but you. Nobody has lived in your body. Nobody lives in your mind. Nobody feels your feelings, your emotions but you. And I think the biggest thing that we can do, and this is a lifelong journey for me, and I think I'll always be on it, but it's to cultivate and keep cultivating day in, day out, more self-compassion and a more loving, harmonious relationship with yourself. Mm-hmm. Because that affects everything.
There's somebody at the start of the Goop podcast, and they have all these sound bites from people, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but someone says on it, if you change your energy, you can change your life. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And like, we could be here for 10 days talking about this. But absolutely, we are all energy, whether we know that, believe that or not. We are energy. And when I was in college studying pharmacy, we'd often look at the dead bodies, the cadavers, and which you need to do, obviously, to look at the anatomy and the physiology and all that. But I was always, I suppose, mesmerized by there's no life there. So there's no thoughts, there's no emotion, there's no feeling, there's no energy. And we now know through science and through lots of amazing new breakthroughs, the power of our energy, the power of our thoughts, and how they can actually shift and change your energy. Your energy is everything, and it affects everything. So if you begin to become more mindful, more conscious, more aware of the thoughts you're thinking, well, then your energy, your cells will actually change. So your cells almost like they pick up on everything that we feel, that we say, and then we radiate energy. And different words that we use have a different vibrational frequency. Mm-hmm. That's why when you get in nature, you're back to a frequency that is more of ease and peace and flow. So that's why you naturally pick up on that energy and you feel it.
And can you literally stop yourself? So just say you get the 75 bus and you're like, this bloody bus is always late, it's driving me mad, blah, blah. And then you're like, no, I'm going to say, I have an extra 5 minutes here to be by myself and to meditate. Or is it as simple as that? Like when you have a kind of negative thought, do you try to turn it into a positive?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not to negate the negative thoughts either. Okay. And I'm not all about, oh, positive, 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 and good vibes only, and da-da-da-da-da, because that's not real life either. We really have to feel all of our emotions and not judge them.
Okay.
So there's no such thing as a good emotion, a bad emotion. An emotion is how you feel is just how you feel. It's not right or wrong. And every emotion has its place, and every emotion should be heard equally and expressed and moved out of the body equally. But when we do get negative thoughts, we can get consumed with them, and they're actually addictive. And believe it or not, we get addicted to negative thoughts, and we get addicted to stress, and we get addicted to being busy. And then we get addicted to chaos, and that's why chaos follows us everywhere. And everything, oh, this always happens to me, and this happens, because we're actually addicted to it, and we're creating it, and we're manifesting it through our energy. Mm-hmm. So the more energy you put into something is the more energy you will give it, so the greater it will create, and the greater it will show up in your life, and you'll see it everywhere. So when we have negative thoughts, it's to be mindful that, okay, it's here, but to remember that you are not your thoughts. And thoughts are like clouds, they come and go. So if you were in a field and you're looking at the clouds, you wouldn't start running after them trying to catch them. You just kind of say, okay, I see it, now I'll just let it move on. The more power you give to a thought, the more energy you give, the more it will manifest and create in your life. So it's beginning to see them, I acknowledge it, I'm not going to suppress it and bury it because that's denying my emotions. I'm going to see it, express, see it, witness it, and then just say, can I let it go? And can I think of something that's more in alignment or more serving? And I think that's a more healthier way. And to remember that we're also not our environment. So your environment may be chaotic. You know, work might be chaotic and people might be giving out and bitching and this, that, and the other. But you do not have to become your environment. We always have a choice. We have a choice to think and react in whatever way we choose. And I think it's just about pausing for a minute, taking a deep breath, before we jump into the reactivity and just say, hang on a minute now, is this conversation going to open my mind, going to open my heart? Is it going to serve me and the people I'm talking to? Or is it going to close my mind, close my heart, and be not serving? I think that just pause before we react can be very transformative.
Amazing.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Fitbit. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. For more on my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.